Okay, so like ready for something a little different.
Always up for a challenge, so yeah, hit me.
Awesome. Today, we're going to tackle well, the Book of Amos.
Ooh, Amos. That's a deep one, Not always the most cheerful read.
True, but so interesting. It's like this prophet, Amos, right? He's totally calling out injustice wherever he sees it. No holding back.
Yeah, and not just like, the usual suspects, the enemies of Israel or whatever. He's taking aim at Israel itself, his own people.
Right, calling them out for social issues, for like, getting caught up in empty rituals and idolatry, the whole nine
It's
yards.
like he's got this laser focus on hypocrisy, especially among the wealthy and powerful. Doesn't pull any punches.
Totally. And it's kind of amazing. Like when you read it today, some of his stuff on social justice feels surprisingly modern.
Oh,
It's just kind of.
absolutely. You can totally draw parallels to a lot of the social justice movements we see happening today. It's uncanny.
But then there's this other side to it, this worldview that's totally shaped by, well, by the time he lived in. And some of those ideas are kind of hard to square with, how we understand things now.
That tension, that's what makes Amos so fascinating, in my opinion at least. You've got this clash between these progressive ideals and a more ancient way of looking at the world.
Totally. And it makes you really think, like, okay, take earthquakes, for example.
Okay, yeah.
Amos describes God using earthquakes as like straight up punishment, right?
Right.
There's even I think it's Amos 5 something. There's this whole passage where God basically promises this massive earthquake as a form of divine judgment,
Yeah.
coming down hard on those who have strayed.
Yeah, and you have to remember, back then, people didn't have the scientific understanding that we have today.
Yeah.
They didn't know about, tectonic plates and all the geological stuff that causes earthquakes.
Right. They didn't have like, seismographs and all that.
Exactly. So for them, it makes sense. The sudden devastating earthquake, it would feel like, well, the direct action of a powerful deity. Like God's literally shaking things up to get people's attention.
Okay, that makes sense, like historically.
Yeah.
But it also brings up a pretty huge question for us today, doesn't
It
it?
does, yeah.
Because if God is, all-knowing, all-powerful, perfectly good, all that, why use natural disasters to punish people? Like, wouldn't that mean tons of innocent people would end up suffering alongside those who are, supposedly being punished?
You hit on like one of the biggest, most fundamental questions in theology, really. It's often called the problem of theodicy, trying to reconcile the existence of suffering and evil in the world with the idea of a benevolent, all-powerful God. Philosophers and theologians, they've been debating this for centuries, and there are no easy answers,
I mean, it's definitely a lot to think about.
It is.
Okay, so we've got earthquakes as divine punishment.
Yeah.
And then there's this whole prophecy angle,
Yeah,
right?
right.
Amos predicts the destruction of Israel. And it's like decades later, boom, the Assyrians conquer them. Seems pretty spot on, right? Like he totally called it.
It does seem that way at first glance, but this is where, this is where understanding the historical context becomes super important.
Okay, so how do we do that? Like, what are the tools we can use to kind of dig deeper into, what was going on back then?
Well, biblical scholars, they use a whole set of methods called biblical criticism.
Oh, okay, I've heard of that,
It
yeah.
sounds kind of harsh, but it's really just about, examining the text carefully, asking critical questions, and one of those questions might be, could these prophecies have been written after the events they describe?
So are you saying that maybe, like, someone wrote this down later? Knowing that Israel had been conquered, and they kind of made it seem like Amos had predicted it, like to give him more authority or something.
It's a possibility that scholars consider, yeah, because, determining the authorship and the dating of biblical texts, it's a very complex process, It's not like we've got like, time-stamped manuscripts or anything. It involves linguistic analysis, comparing different versions of the text, looking at historical records, archaeological evidence, all sorts of things.
Wow, so it's like a whole detective investigation,
It
basically.
kind of is, yeah. And this debate about the timing of prophecies and whether they were written before or after the events, it's not just limited to Amos, It comes up with a lot of biblical prophecies, and it's a major area of discussion and debate in biblical studies.
That's super interesting. Okay, so we've got earthquakes, we've got prophecies, but there's this other like layer to Amos that I find really fascinating, and that's his portrayal of God.
Okay, yeah, what about it?
So like on one hand, God is described as like completely just righteous, the source of all that's good and true. But then there's this other side, right? This image of God as like wrathful and punishing, like bring down those earthquakes we were just talking about. It's almost like experiencing the full force of nature, you know?
Yeah.
Awe-inspiring and terrifying all at the same time.
That's a really interesting way to put it. I like that. And yeah, you've touched on another super complex theological debate here.
Oh, I always do, don't I?
Well, it comes with the territory, right?
<Show them. laughs>
But seriously, if we look at it from, you know, a purely secular viewpoint, some people might argue that these two aspects of God, the loving and the wrathful, they seem contradictory. Like, how can a perfectly good God also be the source of such harsh punishment?
Exactly. It's one of those things that makes you like really stop and think. You know? Like, what do I believe about this? How do I reconcile these different ideas?
It's a good question to wrestle with, absolutely.
Okay. But even with these parts that are, you know, kind of difficult to reconcile with our modern sensibilities, I think Amos's message of social justice is incredibly powerful.
I agree.
Like, he really doesn't hold back. He's telling people, you know, stop trampling on the needy, quit oppressing the poor.
Yeah.
And it's like his words are just as urgent and relevant today as they must have been back then.
Absolutely. His condemnation of social injustice, it resonates so strongly with our modern values of equality and fairness.
Yeah.
Like, take, for example, Amos 5.24, where he calls for justice to roll down like waters and righteousness like an ever-flowing stream. It's such a powerful image, and it continues to inspire, you know, movements for social change even today.
I love that imagery. Okay, but here's where that tension we talked about earlier, it comes back into play again, right? Because Amos's proposed solution to all this injustice is, well, it's essentially divine wrath and destruction. It's like,
right,
God's going to step in and set things right, but not necessarily in a way that we would consider, you know, just or fair today.
Right. And that's where things get a bit tricky for us, don't they? Because our modern understanding of justice, it's more about, you know, reform, rehabilitation, due process. We don't exactly look to divine intervention to punish wrongdoers.
Right. We have, like, you know, courts and laws and all these systems that we've developed to try to ensure justice, as imperfect as they may be.
Exactly. And this really highlights the challenge of applying ancient moral frameworks to our modern world, because our understanding of justice and the best ways to achieve it, it's evolved over time. Reading Amos, it invites us to reflect on these differences and how our own values shape our understanding of justice in today's world.
That's so true. So where does all this leave us? I mean, we have this book with these incredible insights into social justice that still resonate today.
Yes.
But it's also filled with these ideas that clash with, you know, modern science and ethics. What are we supposed to do with that as readers, you know, whether we're approaching it from a religious perspective or just as, you know, people interested in history and literature?
I think the key is to approach texts like Amos with a critical and inquisitive mind, you know, regardless of your personal beliefs, examining them from a historical and a skeptical perspective, it doesn't diminish their value.
Right.
In fact, I think it can lead to a much richer and more meaningful understanding. It's about engaging in a thoughtful exploration rather than just, you know, accepting everything at face value.
That's such an important point. It's not about abandoning our beliefs. It's about being willing to wrestle with complex questions,
yeah,
you know, to consider different perspectives, to be open to new ways of understanding these ancient texts. Who knows? Maybe that process of questioning and exploration can even deepen our understanding of ourselves and the world around us.
I think so too.
I mean, that's kind of the whole point of this whole deep dive, right? To really dig in and see what we can learn.
Absolutely. It's about the journey, not just the destination.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay, so next time we're going to be looking.
Sounds good. I'm looking forward to it.
Me too.
Mm-hmm.